Good afternoon. My name is April, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Premier Healthcare IT Collaborative call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Blair Childs, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs.
Good day, everybody. Welcome to our second call of the collaborative. And again, these are meant to be, information that you can readily use and actionable material. So please provide us feedback as we go forward on these. And we look forward to hearing from you as to what we could be doing with these calls and whether they're meeting your needs. Just a couple of quick things that I wanted to announce before turning this over to Joe Lynch, who's going to manage the agenda today. First off, we do have a meeting scheduled with the National Coordinator for HIT, David Blumenthal, on July 8th. And as part of that, we're going to be soliciting suggestions from all of the members for things that we ought to raise in that meeting. So expect a communication from us for topics that we should address in that meeting, and please provide us your feedback. Secondly, I wanted to just make sure that you are aware of the resource that we've set up with the website, which we have a link in this.
Well,
it's on the I guess it's not in the slides, but we'll send it out and follow up. And I think you've been getting our weekly sort of quick email update. But I just want to underscore, this website is really designed to be a one-stop shop for you. So it's got all of the information that we can find from every available source about what's out there on the different key topical areas. So we're hoping this will be a good place for you to go to get the information, as well as if there's information you would like to add for other people to see. It's easy to do it. It's in a wiki format and all. Not to mention the fact that you can add comments, ask questions, and others who are involved in the collaborative can participate in a conversation there. So just wanted to mention those two things, and expect the communication from us about the meeting with David Blumenthal, and also go to the website and use it, and I think you'll find it a useful resource. So with that, let me turn it over to Joe Lynch, who's going to take over the agenda from here.
Thanks, Blair. So you see on the WebEx the agenda we have for the call. We're going to cover a report from the HIT Standards Committee. That's going to be from Judy Murphy of Aurora, who's on the committee. Then I'm going to quickly go over the high points of two implementation plans that were released this week, one from HHS and the other from the Office of the National Coordinator. And then we're going to turn it over to a couple members of the steering committee to talk about some of their ongoing activities with respect to activities in their state on HIT implementation, and also their efforts to implement HIT matters for their institutions. I want to, before we actually dive into the agenda, I want to mention that when we scheduled this call, we had anticipated building the agenda around the expected release from HHS of guidance on HIT regional extension centers. Those of you who have been on the earlier call are aware that the HHS is going to be releasing guidance on what these regional extension centers are. One of the key issues that I'm on the lookout for is whether a garden variety RIO or HIE is going to be able to qualify as one of these centers, because these centers are in the line to receive a significant amount of funding. That guidance was due out on Monday. It has not been released yet. We have been in touch with the Office of the National Coordinator, and we are told that it is going to be released in the next day or so. And what our plan is, as soon as it is released, we will post on the website the relevant information on the guidance, and we will schedule a call to discuss that guidance, in particular to get your feedback on it, because I think that the guidance is going to come out in a format that will either expressly or implicitly solicit public comments, and that's something we want to do through this collaborative. So we're not going to discuss anything further, at least in the formal agenda, on the regional information or the regional centers. But if you have questions at the end about it, we're certainly happy to address those. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to you, Judy, to give us a little bit of background on the recent HIT Standards Committee meeting.
Okay, thank you very much, and welcome everybody. If you could go to the next slide.
And that's slide number 2.
Correct. And actually, now we're on slide 3. It says across the top, 2 advisory committees to ONC regarding ARA. I think most of you are up to speed based on the briefing that I got in terms of the 2 committees, but just a real quick recap here, the 2 advisory committees to the Office of the National Coordinator and David Blumenthal are the HIT Policy Committee and the HIT Standards Committee. The Policy Committee was identified back in April. It has 20 members. They had their first meeting last week, Monday. It is chaired by David Blumenthal, and their role is really to recommend policies and regulations necessary for implementing the meaningful use and ensure effective implementation. The Standards Committee, which is the second advisory committee, has 23 members. That's the one that I'm a member of. Those were announced in early May, and we also had our first meeting last week, Friday. This is the committee that's co-chaired by Dr. Jonathan Perlin from Hospital Corporation of America and Dr. John Halamka from Harvard and Beth Israel. The role of the Standards Committee will be to recommend standards, implementation specifications, and certification criteria for the electronic exchange and use of health information and related to incentive payments for meaningful use of certified EHR technology. So if you go to the next slide, I'm not going to read through these, but both committees were charged with having these 8 areas of policy focus. And these are actually, we got this in our orientation, and we also got this, it's actually part of the statute itself, in terms of focusing on these 8 areas. A note here, the 3 that have asterisks next to them, which are number 1, number 4, and number 6, actually do have privacy and security ramifications. So just to remind everybody, this isn't just about meaningful use, but it certainly has some security and privacy components as well. And the particular area of focus around privacy and security is the concerns as we move to the interoperability standards that we are able to maintain the privacy of our individuals at the time that we are transferring data between sites or between hospitals or between regions. And then it's really going to step up the monitoring of that and the actual enforcement of that. Again, these are the guiding principles for both the Standards Committee and the Policy Committee. Now, if you go to the next slide, it really does show the relationship of the different committees. And it was real clear when we were briefed last week that we are advisory, and actually the office and David Brailer can choose to, you know, follow the recommendations and can choose not to. David Brailer, of course, was at the meeting, and he assured us that that's why he created the committees. But in truth, it's the office itself that has the control to be able to do the things that need to get done. So if you start in the upper left-hand corner of this process diagram, you can see that the policy committee is doing just that. It is setting the policies and advises those or sets criteria that they want to propose to the national coordinator, who then vets those recommendations and passes on the policy recommendations to the standards committee for which they're in agreement or changes them if they so choose to change them. The HIT Standards Committee then is charged with really moving that to the next level of detail and operationalizing the policies that have come out of the office. And so what's listed there is conducting standards development or harmonization, certification criteria development, or composing the implementation specifications themselves. And the HIT Standards Committee then will also be pilot testing or charging NIST with pilot testing those recommendations that would require pilot testing. summarizing all that together, then they will make, we will make recommendations to the national coordinator, who will then compile all that together and make recommendations to the Department of Health and Human Services and the Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, and that's when the information will finally come out as the full plan. So we're dealing with a lot of moving parts right now, and that's part of the issue. I'm sure many of you have been seeing numerous communications on different listservs and different blogs and different publications and articles. A lot of things are up in the air right now. There's a lot of speculation about what is or isn't going to be in meaningful use, what is or isn't going to be required regarding interoperability, and quite frankly, none of that's come out. Now, that being said, there are some dates that are thrown out there for some specificity related to when things will be available. There's also a lot of thinking that you really shouldn't be stopping any implementations that you are already planning because there are some sort of given things. And that sets the stage for the next slide, if you want to advance the slide. The Standards Committee itself, when we met on Friday, and I'll talk about the timelines and things, we did form three subcommittees looking at things around clinical operations, looking around things related to clinical quality, and looking at things related to privacy and security. Those subcommittees have not yet been formed. This is the week that we've each suggested what committee we wanted to be on. They're vetting all of our suggestions, and then we're going to get assigned to the committees by the end of the week. Operations is really going to focus on the metrics around things like implementation and use and adoption. So they're by nature probably going to be talking, we'll be talking more around process metrics, if you will. Clinical quality, on the other hand, is really going to be focusing a lot more on measurements and quality metrics, so more outcomes orientation. They'll really be looking at the harmonization of the different kinds of quality measures that we really have today and hopefully settling on, you know, let's not have differences between, you know, JCO and between CMS and between AHRQ. Let's harmonize those standards and come up with one set. And, oh, by the way, that needs to be driven by the operations things that an organization is actually doing in their electronic health record, and a lot of early discussion about the fact that this needs to be a byproduct of the electronic health record. That's the whole purpose of this. So it will probably not include any kind of submission of information that was collected manually. And then last but not least, that third committee, privacy and security. So we had early discussions on meaningful use, and this would actually fall into the subcommittee around clinical operations. And several of the blogs, in particular John Halamka's blog, you know, he advertised these four things, which is what we were sort of settling on, but that only means that we were settling on it in very early discussion. It certainly doesn't mean that this is the for sure direction that we're headed. But we talked about electronic prescribing, and it's important to note that that was both in the inpatient and the outpatient setting. So this is not just the traditional e-prescribing, but it is, in fact, the entering of medication orders in an inpatient setting as well, physician directly inputting electronically, and medication management electronically. The second one, lab ordering and result reporting, and this really follows up on a lot of the early AHIC work around their use cases, and this seems to be an area that's probably the largest developed. Now, not meant to exclude radiology, so that might end up getting put in there, or maybe it's order entry overall. And then clinical summary exchange. This is following up again on some of the early work that's been done around the CCR and the CCD standard, but specifically looking at information that can be packaged and easily moved between facilities and between sites or regions. And the early definition of that one was things like the name and the demographics, but then it would, of course, include the allergies and the pertinent history and the medication list, possibly advanced directives. So that was kind of the direction we were going in that earlier preliminary discussion. And then what quality indicators would be a byproduct of the electronic health record that we'd want to measure. So in terms of timelines related to the work of the Standards Committee, we talked about the need for two timelines. One is a very expedited timeline. We do have a statutory deadline to provide an interim rule in initial standards implementation specifications and certification criteria by the end of this year. So we're going to be on a fast track to get that early information out. And then our normal timeline will be as we receive policy guidelines or guidance from the policy committee. We'll be expected to iterate that and respond within 90 days with our recommendations to the office, and realizing that that will be a moving target. That will be something that we're kind of moving along on. Okay, so if we go to the next slide. This is where I'm going to turn it over. I'm not sure who's doing this presentation.
I'm going to pick up from you, Judy. This is Joe Lynch, but I want to point out, Judy, that I think you left one very important piece of information out of your presentation, and that is which of the three subcommittees you want to get on.
Oh, yes, thank you. We had to list our first, second, and third, and there's only three choices, so I don't know what that means, but I opted to go number one for clinical operations, number two for clinical quality, and number three for privacy and security. And that's based on, number one, my interest, but it's also based on my experience and expertise.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick it up just briefly discussing what the implementation plans that came out this week say. As I said earlier, one is from HHS, the other is from the ONC. And I'm not going to hit all of the points, but I want to identify a couple things that I think are significant. So in the HHS, and by the way, I think we're now on to slide six. It's the slide that has at the top HHS implementation plan under AARA.
Slide seven.
So the implementation plan is the HHS implementation plan is not especially detailed, but it does list target milestones for HHS. And you'll see on the slide that one of the target milestones for fiscal year 2009 is a definition of meaningful use. As Judy said, there's a deadline of the end of this year for the interim final regs, and they couldn't be released without the meaningful use definition. But what I think is significant is the ONC has publicly predicted a draft meaningful use definition within the next 30 days. And I'm going to jump just for a second to talk about the ONC implementation plan. There's a potential disconnect between these two plans, and that is on the issue of the extent to which there is going to be a formal period of notice and comment regarding any of the material that will be covered in the interim final rule. If you read the HHS implementation plan, and this is in the second bullet on the slide, it refers to proposed rules with respect to the EHR incentive program policies. And that language, proposed rules, signals that HHS would be releasing the rules in draft with a period for public comment. In contrast to that, the terminology interim final rule indicates that the agency can release the rules without a prior period for public comment. So there's a little ambiguity between these two implementation plans as to whether there will or will not be a period of public comment, formal public comment, prior to the release of the interim final rule. And part of the reason that I draw your attention to that is that I think that the possibility that there will not be a period of formal public comment just puts that much more emphasis on the significance of Premier's upcoming meeting with David Blumenthal on July 8. Blair said it as opening comments that we're going to be soliciting information from the members of the collaborative on issues of concern to them. As a part of that solicitation, we'll be circulating lists and maybe even descriptions of issues to you to react to. But that meeting with David Blumenthal is going to be, I think, a very important opportunity for the members of the collaborative to try to make their case on the issues of greatest concern. If it turns out that there is a period of public comment before the end of the calendar year, so much the better. but I do think that this is a very important opportunity, so I really strongly recommend that you get to us through whatever way is easiest. Get to us anything on issues of concern to your institution. A couple other things on the HHS implementation plan of significance. The statute is a little unclear about the rollout dates for the Medicaid EHR incentives, but the implementation plan says that those incentives are going to be rolled out in calendar year 2011 on a time frame that's consistent with what's going to happen on the Medicare side. Second is the implementation plan clarifies that for hospitals, the incentives are going to be paid through the existing cost reporting methodology. That statement doesn't provide an awful lot of clarity as to how that's going to work in practice, whether it's going to be some kind of interim payment or year-end reconciliation. But at least it's going to be through the same kind of methodology that you're used to now in terms of your cost reporting reimbursement. And then the final point I'll mention from the implementation plan is there's this very obscure reference to the need for multi-state work groups. And I've included on the slide the quotation from the plan that refers to these multi-state work groups. I will tell you that reading this reference in the implementation plan, I have not a clue as to what is being conveyed there. I think we'll certainly learn more about that as time rolls on. I don't think that there's an action item with respect to this right now, but it is something we're going to be watching for you because it could be that these multi-state work groups end up being significant in terms of the rollout of the Medicaid EHR incentives. If you go to the next slide, slide 8, I think it is, titled ONC Implementation Plan under AARA, a couple of points about the National Coordinator's Implementation Plan. I mentioned at the outset of the call that there was not the draft release on the regional extension centers. The implementation plan refers to a notification by the end of September of this year regarding these HIT regional extension centers. I want to emphasize that that does not mean we're going to be completely in the dark until the end of September. We do fully expect there to be an announcement in the next couple of days on this, and so that will give us some insight as to what these centers are all about. I mentioned already the second point, the idea that there may not be an opportunity for formal public comment. And then the last thing I think of significance in the ONC implementation plan is that there will be an opportunity for public input between mid-August and the end of mid-May and the end of August of this year on the federal HIT strategic plan. And it's a little unclear how that public input is going to be solicited, but at a minimum it's going to be through hearings and meetings that the ONC is going to coordinate. We've received a few questions, I think, by email already, and we do have time at the end for those questions. But before that, I want to turn it over to the members of the steering committee to talk about their experiences. And initially, I'd like to turn it over to Susan Waldman and Zainab Summer, who are with the Greater New York Hospital Association. So Susan and Zainab, if you could take it away.
And I'm sorry, this is Judy Murphy. I am going to have to leave, so I don't know if you want to handle any questions for me specifically quickly now. I apologize.
Oh, no, that's okay. I think that's a good suggestion. If there are specific questions for Judy, why don't we take a couple minutes now and raise those. And operator, can we open it up for questions now?
Yes, sir. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then the number 1 on your telephone keypad.
And Judy, while those are queuing up, we do have one that came in online. It asks, who will decide the membership of the subcommittees?
The two chairs, which would be John Halamka and Jonathan Perlin, along with David Blumenthal. And right now, they're just divvying up the members of the HIT Standards Committee amongst those three subcommittees. But once the subcommittees start meeting, there will be the possibility of bringing in guests to sit on those subcommittees as well.
Great.
That was a good clarification.
Operator, any questions for Judy?
No, sir, not at this time.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Have a good rest of the meeting.
Thank you very much, Judy.
And I see, by the way, you put the link for John Halamka's blog, and I would encourage people. He does just a fabulous job. Within 8 hours, I think, of the end of the meeting, he had posted a summary already. So he really does keep up with the activities. It's a real nice resource.
That's great. And are questions that arise on the materials that Judy covered later in the call, we will make sure that we get back answers on those questions as quickly as possible. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Susan Waldman and Zainab Sommer.
Thank you. It's Zainab Sommer from Greater New York Hospital Association. Hello, everybody. And Joe, thank you for the opportunity to talk about what we're doing here in New York. So Greater New York Hospital Association has, since the ARRA has come out, put together an HIT steering committee made up of our membership, but we've been working with key stakeholders in our state to facilitate the discussions of that HIT steering committee, and those key stakeholders include the other hospital association in New York, Haney's, the United Hospital Fund, which is a foundation that does a lot of work around quality and patient safety with Greater New York, and the New York eHealth Collaborative, which is a public-private partnership, and they are charged with implementing the State Department of Health's Health Information Exchange strategy in New York State. So that, that's a partnership with healthcare stakeholders and the State Department of Health. And we have quite a robust strategy for health information technology and exchange, infrastructure for New York State, and they are charged with implementing that. Our HIT steering committee, on the other hand, is charged with three main areas. The first is policy and advocacy around specific issues that have arisen as a result of the ARRA, and I'm sure that these issues are of concern to this group as well, or to the hospitals on the line as well. Specifically, we're looking, obviously, at meaningful use and what we want that to look like, what would be meaningful but at the same time attainable. Secondly, of concern is the issue of multi-campus hospitals, especially those systems that have hospital campuses that share Medicare provider numbers or MPIs, and how they will be paid through the ARRA. And lastly, the hospital-based physicians, and specifically those physicians that are employed by our member hospitals. A second area that this HIT steering committee is looking at is actual technical implementation. We have a lot of hospitals at very different places in terms of implementation or adoption of HIT. We're really trying to get our arms around what would be the next a logical next step as a consortium or a collaborative to assist all of our members in achieving or accessing the stimulus funds to the extent feasible, and also to avoid penalties. And part of that is also working with the New York eHealth Collaborative in our state and making sure that all of the implementation activities are tied into and aligned with the state's goals. We've found just in the last couple of months that hospitals are really looking for assistance with implementation on all kinds of issues, including system selection, contract language, and training of staff, et cetera. So we're looking at those types of issues and seeing how we can collaborate on them and assist our membership. Lastly, we are looking at regulatory issues and financing issues relating to HIT adoption. We've been speaking with the State Department of Health again and an entity called the Dormitory Authority of the State of New York about creating loan programs that would use the anticipated stimulus funding as a form of security, quote-unquote security, and we're also trying to figure out ways to speak with local banks, especially for smaller hospitals, to provide these types of loans while we wait for additional stimulus funding to for development of those loan programs. In addition, we are working with the state also on New York State has a certificate of need process that hospitals do need to go through, and within the last 6 to 8 months, that certificate of need process has actually been changed for specifically for HIT projects. This was pre-ARRA. Our state, as I mentioned, has a very robust strategy, and as part of that, they made the certificate of need process for HIT projects much more stringent. For example, there's a requirement that any hospital implementing an EHR must also commit to working with an existing RIO in our state. So we are trying to work with the state to make sure that any of those types of administrative requirements don't get in the way of adoption and accessing stimulus funds. And lastly, and I think everyone's dealing with this, is working with with the state on how Medicaid funds will be distributed to hospitals and physicians. We recently had a meeting with our Office of Insurance Programs and our Office of Health Information Technology within the Department of Health specifically about this issue, and of course the way, you know, our concern is that New York doesn't leave any of the money coming to New York on the table, again, due to any difference in criteria for meaningful use for New York State versus the federal government, and our Department of Health is completely with us on that from what they've told us. They did, however, lay out what their goals are specifically. I would urge all hospitals, or if any hospital associations are on the line from other states, I would urge hospitals to encourage their hospital associations to do the same, to schedule meetings with the Department of Health and their Office of Insurance Programs to make sure that their goals are aligned, their Medicaid office knows that they're going to be responsible for distributing these funds, or at least developing the criteria for the distribution of these funds. So in New York, however, what they told us was that their interpretation of meaningful use was tied to New York State's Medicaid goals and advancing those goals, and they focused on three specific areas. One is that even, you know, without meaningful use, without the stimulus funds, our Medicaid program is working on reevaluating state's hospital's business model, and with meaningful use, they will be looking for those proposed revised business models to include meaningful use and electronic health records in their formal business plan. Secondly, our state is currently looking at advancing the patient-centered medical home concept across providers in New York State. And that, of course, EHRs or HIT is the linchpin to making that happen. They are looking for EHR implementation plans that would incorporate or take this into account, and they're including that as part of, you know, meaningful use. So meaningful use equaling an effective coordination of care across providers. And lastly, we do have a medication management program as part of our larger Medicaid program. Recent legislation has appropriated some incentive money for electronic prescribing, providers that do electronic prescribing. So they are also tying the meaningful use definition to these existing initiatives. So we've got a lot going on. I think in some ways the criteria is aligned, but maybe a couple of steps ahead in terms of the thinking with respect to meaningful use. So we're a little concerned, but they've assured us, Department of Health has assured us, that they are going to make sure that nobody misses out on any incentive funds that that they would qualify for at the federal level. So we're hopeful, and we're going to continue to speak with them. Just one thing I didn't mention that's all tied to this as well is that in New York State we have a program called Heal New York. So far through Heal New York, $160 million in HIT funding has been distributed to various projects and providers. There's an additional $60 million that will likely be distributed by the end of the year, for HIT projects, and specifically this last $60 million is tied to demonstrating successful coordination of care through this patient-centered medical home model. But again, the focus is on electronic health records, on RIOs, and what we're calling CHITAs, their Community Health Information Technology Adoption Collaboratives, and their role in helping providers adopt technology. In New York State, these were created through this HEAL process, these CHITA entities, and they reflect in a lot of ways the responsibilities of a regional extension center, so they would be assisting providers through the adoption. So that's about it. I've gone on a long time. I'm sorry if I took up too much time, but I'm happy to take any questions.
Why don't, Zainab, that was terrific. Why don't we hold off on questions until the end? And I want to turn it over in just a second to Craig Richardville, one of the other members of the steering committee, but I want to just very quickly pick up on a couple of points that Zainab mentioned. First is, I think it was very clear from her comments that she and her colleagues at the Greater New York Hospital Association have done an awful lot of work educating the state officials as to what the role of the state officials is and what their authority is. And I think that's really a critical part of the communications that should be going on between collaborative members and their states, because I think a lot of the states really don't have a very clear sense of what their role is and also don't have a clear sense of the role they can play in terms of advancing your interests with HHS. So that's one reason why we wanted to have some of the steering committee members touch on that. Second is, Zainab mentioned just in passing the idea of multi-campus hospitals, and I want to just touch on that briefly. An issue has come up as to whether if a system has multiple hospital campuses all submitting claims under a single provider number, whether the multiple campuses can be treated as separate hospitals for purposes of EHR incentives. And if so, that could be a very significant increase in the EHR funds or EHR incentives available to those multi-hospital systems. So those of you on the line that have multiple hospital campuses, we should be communicating about that issue. We will be communicating about that issue, but it would be helpful for you to get in touch with us if your system falls into that category. And then the final point that I'll make, and this is in response to a question that was raised, but it's also something that Zainab touched on, and that is now the appropriate time for hospitals to start their local and regional efforts to organize RIOs and health information exchanges? And my answer to that question is absolutely yes. Now is the time to start doing that. I personally think that in almost every community, it will be necessary to have a RIO in order to ultimately meet the meaningful use standard. And I actually wasn't familiar that New York State was requiring that. It doesn't surprise me, though, that New York State is requiring that. So in response to the question that was submitted through email, I do think now is the time to get started on that. And what we'll be doing here through the collaborative and future calls is presenting information that will help you do that, help you organize those efforts. So,
Joe, I'm sorry, this is Zainab again. I just forgot to mention one thing, and I think it's critical to any advocacy efforts at the state level. One of the things, you know, the states, they do understand the incentive funds, but I don't think they have read, in many cases, the legislation as carefully as we all have, because we, you know, a lot is tied to it for us. So I think it's really worth talking through all of the issues you might think are really obvious. For example, I had a conference call just a couple of days ago, again, with the same people from the Office of Insurance Programs, and happened to mention in passing the issue about hospital-based physicians, and they had no idea that this was an issue. And they mentioned that they were meeting the Medicaid programs from various states were convening next week, and that they would, you know, bring it up. They thought that it was really important in terms of the larger goals for HIT that both physician outpatient and inpatient settings are, you know, adopt HIT, and so they're going to advocate on our behalf, and it can't hurt to bring these issues up with them as well.
So I think that's a great point, and I'm equally shocked that anyone wouldn't know that that's a leading issue at this point. With that, I'd like to turn it over to one of our other steering committee members, Craig Richardville. Craig, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, Joe. Thank you for the opportunity. I really just want to talk about two things. One is what is happening within the state of North Carolina, and two is just kind of give you an update about where we're at in our process. Carolina's healthcare system is based out of Charlotte. We're 28 hospitals and about 1,200 physicians. The facilities are in both North and South Carolina, although the majority of facilities are in North. We have within our state in 1994 an alliance was created. It was an executive order of the governor, and it consists of providers and also vendors slash partners. I am on the board of that alliance. It's called the North Carolina Healthcare Information and Communication Alliance in CHICA. And that is really the forum that we're using within the state of North Carolina to help define what the state hopefully will do, as well as representing the state and speaking back to the ONC. A couple of major initiatives right now with that group. One is we've been working for several years on a North Carolina Health Information Exchange Council. Even though it wasn't called HIE at that time, we've changed the name. And they have both a operating committee and also a finance and administration committee. So that team has been working on developing the specifications and the requirements of what we feel would be eligible for an HIE within the state of North Carolina. At the same time, they're also working with the ONC, and it was just specifically brought up, they actually have a contract with the ONC, and it's the only entity in the state of North Carolina that's working with them on several potential concerns. One right now is actually the definition of what a hospital-based eligible professional is. So that, among other items, the ANCHICA group within our state is looking at trying to have an impact that would influence and hopefully help out the providers and the vendors that work in North Carolina. Regarding ourselves, a couple of things. We've done what we call a business case analysis, which is basically a pro forma of all of the incentives that we feel would be achieved and also the cost that we think it would take us to get there. And looking at the facilities that we have, and we're looking at what we're calling system managed, which is the 14 largest facilities within our system, we looked at what it would take to normally roll out the process in order to meet all of the requirements. So that's looking at the existing resources that we have, the game plans that we currently have in place, the status of each of the different facilities and practices. And for us to roll it out on a normal schedule was about 6.5 years. And that would take us to the end of 2015 to be done with what we believe would be the case to meet the requirements. And with that, there are incentives that we would achieve, but also with some of the latter facilities, there would be penalties incurred. Then we did what we call the sensitivity analysis. So we kind of dialed it up and said, what would it take in order to do this such that we would reduce the incentives but also avoid all penalties? So this first one was no penalties incurred by any of our facilities. And that was about a 5-year, 3-month plan, and it increased our cost of that plan by about 10%. And then we looked at to see what it would take to maximize all the incentives, and we're calling this like a sensitivity analysis, and to get 100% of all the incentives for all of our facilities, and that actually would take us about a year earlier, and it was another 10% increase in the cost. So to get us from where we normally would roll out this type of schedule for all of our facilities to where we feel we'd be able to maximize the incentives is about a 20% premium in the cost of delivering that service. At the same time, we took a look at what we would do for new practices and new facilities coming on board. So as part of our normal planning process now, we've estimated by certain sizes what it would take to put that on. So as we're looking at other hospitals and other practices, when they do their pro forma on that analysis, those costs are now included in those discussions. So we really know what the total investment and potential incentive would be. But as the years go by, obviously the incentives become less and actually go away and you get penalized. So from our perspective, that has to be a normal cost of doing businesses. So any current discussions and future discussions, we understand that what the cost is to do business with those facilities. When you look at each of the different facilities, and so this was really kind of the grouping of all of them. When we looked at each of them, it was rather, eye-opening of the diversity of what we would be the return on the investment. So they range anywhere from the cost of putting in these systems and the adoption of these systems, anywhere from a recouped of 50% of those costs to some of the other facilities, which really most of them were the mid-sized facilities, actually had a return up to about 150% of the cost. So they kind of balanced out in the end where 97% of our cost at this point we believe would be covered by the incentives if we did the full optimization of getting the incentives, but the range by facility varied greatly. So depending on how we decide to do it, a 4-year plan or a 6.5-year plan will really influence our rollout and the order of that rollout pending those kinds of results. The last point I will make, we have two, and this would be great to get feedback from the group, two items that are really in the points of discussion right now more from a strategic perspective. One more important than the other, but really the first one is independent physicians. So as I mentioned, we have 1,200 physicians that are aligned or employed within Carolina's health system, but there's still a large amount of independent physicians and practices out there who do not have an EMR in place. So one of the strategies that we're discussing is, do we want to be the one that provides that opportunity for them? And if so, is it something that we would use the Stark Safe Harbors for to potentially subsidize them with those agreements or that investment? And the second one that we have the same kind of discussions about are what we call regional facilities, some of the smaller rural facilities where we have management agreements. What would be the opportunity of maybe pulling a half a dozen of those together and creating a small core system to have them all meet the potential requirements and take advantage of the incentives versus doing it more in a silo approach. They're a little bit more autonomous in their systems versus the core group of facilities. So that's something we're talking about internally that some of you may or may not have that kind of an issue to discuss. But the independent physicians, I believe, is something that is looking at right now to be more of a strategic move to tie them closer in and kind of create that glue back to our healthcare system, yet there's a risk of doing that, and also there's also another risk of potentially delaying our own family physicians by spending resources toward the independents. That's really all that I wanted to share with the group, Joe.
Greg, that's very helpful, and I want to pick up on the last point that you touched on there. I do think that we will be organizing a call very shortly to focus in a lot of detail on this issue of hospital-based eligible professionals, both as it relates to physicians that are quote-unquote in the family of each of your facilities, whether directly employed by the hospital or through a hospital affiliate or under contract with a hospital or hospital affiliate, but also as it relates to what Craig just talked about, and that is the issue of affiliating with members of your medical staff who are not directly in the hospital family. I do think that that is going to be a very central issue, both from the standpoint of advising the ONC on the issues of concern, but also important from a strategic and structuring standpoint. And so I think that we will be devoting a separate call to that shortly. I don't think any other members of the steering committee are on the line and ready to talk, but if anyone who is on the line, any steering committee members want to jump in, please let me know. So that being the case, operator, we're going to open it up for questions now. And if you could do that for us.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one.
And just while the questions are queuing up, I want to address a couple that have come in over the email. First is the question of whether Premier itself ought to consider trying to seek status as an HIT regional extension center. And I suppose that could be done through Premier or through Premier affiliates that operate more on a regional level that may even be formed to do that. I think that's a very interesting question. I think Premier could provide the kind of technical assistance that these regional HIT centers are contemplated as providing. I think we really have to reserve on that question until we get the guidance from the ONC, which, as I said, is going to be in the next day or so. But since there is a significant amount of money that's available, and perhaps even more importantly, since I think Premier could be a great source of information on that level, I think it's definitely an issue worth considering once the guidance comes out. Second question I'll address that came in via email is on this question of multi-hospital systems. For now, I think it would be helpful if you could contact me directly. My email address is jlynch, L-Y-N-C-H, at kslaw.com. And I think if you can let me know whether you do have multiple hospitals on your or multiple hospital campuses. And I think what also would be of utility is if you can use the calculator that Premier circulated for estimating your EHR incentives. I think it'd be useful for you to run that, both assuming that your multiple hospital campuses are going to be treated as one hospital on the one hand, and then what it would separately result in if they were treated as multiple hospitals for purposes of EHR incentives. So do we have any questions?
There are no questions at this time.
We've got one electronic here. Joe, maybe you could answer. What assumptions are you making about the meaningful use criteria to perform your pro formas? Comes from Donna.
That's a really good question. I think that it's been a while since I looked at the calculator that Premier circulated, but I think that the calculator assumes that you will qualify, whatever the definition is, that you will qualify. And so for purposes of what I just said on the multi-hospital campus, I think that's the way you should run the calculation. In terms of, if what you're asking is what do we think the definition is going to come out as, it's anyone's guess, but let me mention a couple of things that the David Blumenthal, the national coordinator, has said recently, as well as have been mentioned in the policy committee meeting and I believe the standards committee meeting as well. Everyone is saying that the bar for qualifying will not be set at a level that is too difficult to get over, at least in the early years. Everyone is also saying that meaningful use should focus on use itself as opposed to merely having the technology. I think if you read those two comments together, what I'm assuming is that at least for the first year of EHR incentives, and possibly for the first 2 years, I think that it's not going to be very difficult to qualify. Another thing that you're beginning to hear, and Judy alluded to this, is that in the early stages, the kind of information that you are going to have to be able to communicate is likely to be limited to e-prescribing information or possibly radiologic images.
And hey, Joe, I can jump for a second. This is Craig.
Great.
Pro formas that we did for our facilities, the functionality that we looked at and the associated products that would help us achieve that functionality, we looked at clinical health information, so that's basically all of your ancillary services. We looked at nursing documentation. We looked at ensuring we had clinical decision support, medication administration with barcoding, CPOE, e-prescribing, physician documentation, and that we captured quality information, we tied into an HIE, and we also did quality metric reporting. So those were the functions that we believed and how we estimated, you know, on the cost side, that we'd have to be executed and adopted in order to qualify.
Okay, so I hope that answers the question. And Donna or anyone else, if you do have more questions on those pro formas, let us know, and we can consider putting information on the website that might help you with respect to those pro formas. Are there any other questions?
There are no audio questions at this time.
We're about ready to wrap up. Let me just close with one thought, and that is, those of you who are following the media on all of the many presentations that David Blumenthal is giving, probably saw earlier this week that Blumenthal made a comment along the lines of, we know that there's a lot to get done in the time available. It's not out of the realm of possibility that the timetable will be pushed back. I am putting absolutely no stock at all in that comment, not that I think that Blumenthal is being disingenuous, but in order to push the timetables back, that is something that Congress would have to do through legislation, because the timetable is set forth in the legislation. I don't have any confidence that Congress is going to be interested in pushing the timetable back. So even if the Office of the National Coordinator and HHS feel that there's not enough time to act within this established timetable, I do not think that those are going to change, and I don't think anyone ought to assume they're going to change. So with that, I'll turn it over to Blair to wrap up.
Yeah, just thanks, everybody, for participating. And I want to thank, too, Judy and Craig and Zena for presenting here today. And, again, feedback is appreciated. If there are things that you think we ought to be adding in terms of these calls for other kind of content that would be useful, please let us know. Email John David White or Joe or myself, Blair Childs, Blair_Childs at PremierInc.com. So thanks for your participation and continuing to keep us up to speed on what's important to you. Operator, you can conclude the call.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now disconnect.